Welcome back to Blogs on Tape. Today's posts are all from the Weird Wonder blog, written by Amanda P. They can be read at weirdwonder.bearblog.dev. Prepping people-centered situations in tabletop role-playing games. Originally published in September of 2023. I'm fascinated by social dynamics and strategy. When I think about creating situations in role-playing games, my focus is very people-first. From my point of view, interactivity and grounding depend on having a living world of people with their own desires and agendas. Locations matter to me, but are decidedly second in my own planning to whoever is at said location. It informs how I structure random encounter tables and how I write keyed locations, which I will attempt to delineate the thinking behind here. Determine overarching conflicts and tensions. First, determine what is causing conflict and tension between people in the immediate area. It can be as small as, there are three missing teenagers who were last seen camping in the woods. You might introduce as secondary layers, there's a wizard that locals regard with suspicion, or there are restless undead wandering the forest, or the local storyteller intimates that this has happened before, heightening local anxiety. Ideally, layer multiple tensions that are not all directly related upon one another. Think about how they might impact one another. Creating non-player characters tied to the larger world. Each non-player character should have a clear drive, hidden desires, and treasured secrets that they could share if approached correctly. These characters should be, to a greater or lesser extent, tied to the overarching conflicts and tensions, or create opportunities for the party to strengthen or weaken their overall position. Non-player characters' opposed desire conflicts can be based on opportunity versus disadvantage, differing responses to external danger, pressure created by time, goals that are at odds, individual idiosyncrasies, social pressure, or existing interpersonal conflict exacerbated by a new element. Also, not every NPC should be savvy on current events and politics. That is unrealistic, and ignorance creates a very natural source of tension. The non-player character should be placed in a location that relates to their drive, hidden desires, or treasured secrets. Ideally, one that highlights these or creates additional pressures or tension. Building vignettes of conflicted desires. Building on these layered conflicts, the referee can create small-scale situations that I'll call vignettes for the players to stumble upon that imply a larger world. The components of a vignette are a flavorful, textured location, interesting characters that push engagement and conflict, and opportunities for adventurers to engage in the overarching conflicts and secrets. Vignettes can be keyed locations or random encounters. I think about vignettes as a jack-in-the-box. Simple, tense, and responsive to applied action or pressure. Ideally, in a vignette with multiple NPCs, those drives and desires are not in alignment, creating more tension. This incongruity creates opportunity for the adventuring party to, deliberately or not, apply pressure, tipping the scales one way or another through their actions. Examples. In my zine, Tanic, I wrote a series of festival encounters that are intended to push the party to become connected to and known to the town leadership. Here are two examples. A youth is pickpocketing sweets and shiny things at the shop stalls. Guards appear to have noticed and are beginning to approach. The youth rushes over to the adventurers, yelling, "My parents, there you are!" The festival stage manager is arguing with a wizard wearing a hat emblazoned Mystical Larry. He was hired to create fireworks. A flock of 4-year-old children dressed in owl costume approach, herded by a tired sheepdog. They begin messing with the fireworks laying about. No one else has noticed. You get the sense that the festival location has active guards, but opportunistic young thieves are about as well. This is an all-ages festival. Every encounter has two or more moving parts, creating opportunities for tension and conflict. This also illustrates that opportunities for conflict can be people-focused and not geared immediately toward violence. Characters as Landmarks with Secrets. Originally published in October of 2023. Applying landmark, hidden, secret methodology to people-centered situations with key location writing. In Anne Hunter's post, Landmark Hidden Secret, on the DIY and Dragons blog, referees have a hierarchy of information. Landmarks of a location, as well as hidden and secret information that can be discovered through thoughtful and, at times, risky play. For an extremely brief paraphrased summary of the idea, landmark information is automatic and free. Hidden information comes at a cost to the players, usually of time and being close by. Secret information requires something extra, like applying a skill that can't easily be modeled by player description, or perhaps requires more time than the party has, creating risk and danger, or knowledge of the hidden information to find the secret. How does this apply to people-centered situations? When I write locations, my focus is the people in the location. They are the point of interest in a location. The dynamic, interactable thing that connects the adventuring party to setting and its conflicts. Here's an example from Orstruck, an adventure I'm writing. Area 3, the Naiad's Pond. Fine, sandy soil coated with pine needles surrounds a small, tea-brown cedar pond covered in lily pads, surrounded by white cedar trees. At center, a small islet with a green weathered canoe beached on shore. Voices can be overheard from the surrounding woods. On shore, Helga, the fisherwoman, homespun, cranberry red hair with white flyaways, folksy femme person, low voice. Flirting and comically arguing with Envy, the naiad, exasperated, graying hair, woven pitch pine and blueberry bud dress, high voice. Helga seeks to expand their long-term forest fishery business, will pelt the party members with market research questions on their fish purchasing habits. Envy tires of business talk and desires Helga's romantic attention, will ask them questions about their ideal date while looking pointedly at Helga, will warn mortals about the dangers of deals with the dreamers, forthwith and erstwhile. Eat a fish from the pond received through gift or trade, get lucky. Ignore one failed save or test over the next 24 hours. In the above key, the landmarks at this point is the area description, the two NPCs, Helga and Envy, and the immediate information about their business and romance. The player characters could easily be pulled into a somewhat silly NPC interaction regarding fishing and romance, learning nothing. Hidden information would be the information about the two dreamers, forthwith and erstwhile. Adventuring parties will have come across information about them in the town and would be wise to attempt to learn more. Secret information would be regarding the magic fish, a party that engages well with the NPCs socially and does some dealing around the fishing business could receive this extremely useful one-time-use magic item. The order of the information in the key also matters, providing a hierarchy with landmark information first, followed by hidden, and then secret information. I structured my keyed encounters this way because I like rewarding pro-social play at my table and in my adventures. Also, it's much easier, I think, as a game master, to have the information in this order when running at the table. Social Contracts Shall Be Splintered. Originally published in September of 2024. On building complex social dynamics in adventuring locales using petty desires and the local social contract. I believe that an important component of developing an interesting village location for an adventure is ensuring that not all problems can or should be solved with a sword. When I start writing adventures, the first thing I start working out is the people and their social dynamics. This does not need to be a large-scale, world-shifting fiction with hidden princes being raised by the local cobbler. It can be as simple as Fritz the Woodcutter distrusts Peregrine the Hunter. This may seem simple on its face, but if you layer many of these over one another, it starts to make a messy stew. This can be strengthened by identifying a few petty desires and the overarching social rules for the small community. Player interactivity is, of course, important as well, as this is for a role-playing game, and that must always be top of mind. That being said, grubby adventurers cannot solve every problem. On petty desires. What do I mean by petty desires? Petty desires are minor desires, whether social, economic, or romantic. They create opportunities for direct or indirect conflict or power struggles. An example using Fritz from earlier might be, in the hamlet of Mare, the population skews significantly older, leaving few eligible young people. Fritz the Woodcutter distrusts Peregrine the Hunter because he views Peregrine as a handsome and strong romantic rival for the affections of Gilda the Herbalist. This leads to a few thoughts. What caused there to be so few young people? How toxic is Fritz? What rumors might he spread? How might Peregrine react? Violence? One could then layer on Gilda and her own petty desires. Gilda the Herbalist believes she is ready to graduate, but her teacher refuses to release her from her apprenticeship. Gilda's desire to leave town could cause her to make short-sighted, impulsive decisions, like making a deal with a ne'er-do-well merchant or agreeing to bear the child of a strange fey forest being. The point of this is to say, one or two of these is boring, but when you layer, say, five or six, and then figure out how they interact and create additional complexities, then you have the beginning of an interesting location. The social contract. The social contract, put simply, is the implicit or explicit agreed-upon rules that allow a community to function. These can be as simple as do not murder. The punishment for violations of the social contract is separate from the rules themselves. Develop at least three specific rules, one of which should be particularly flavorful. An example might be, a weapon shall not be drawn with violent intent in the village limits. Merchant trade shall not happen on Sunday. Those who are to be wed must seek the fairy's blessing in the Moonstone Glen. Only those blessed shall be wed. Then, examine your petty village conflicts and determine a few places where your social contract interacts with the petty desires and conflicts. Determine, how can I make this more immediately specific, direct, and unsubtle? How will this problem be interactable for the players? In closing, developing adventure sites is about creating problems for the players to interact with that also make the place seem real, or at least credible, only some of which the players will be able to have an impact on. The town linked to an adventure site should be a space belonging to its immediate environment, where there has been a significant disruption with interpersonal and broader social implications. The place's social contract should delineate the community's priorities and provide explicit opportunities and problems that the adventurers can have an immediate impact on. On People-Centered Adventure Design, originally published in September of 2024. Writing adventure modules exercises two disparate skills, writing and design. When I studied design, the central thesis of our work was as follows. Designers solve problems. Adventure writing and design is unique because it encompasses narrative and instruction writing, designing interesting problems, and providing access, but not solutions, for the players. Writing adventures requires supporting the agency of characters to explore and problem solve, and of the referee to comprehend and explicate for others. Adventure writers design problems, solve the problem of not having problems.
Footnote: Nick L. S. Whalen suggested this joke to be added and read it. Thank you, Nick.
Adventures are not novels. Writing advice for novels does not translate to adventures. They are a different medium. Preferences based on a narrative form that is linear and climatic by its nature in the West are antithetical to creating situations in which players and the referee have choice and agency. The answer, to me, is people-centered writing and design. Adventures are intended to be read and enjoyed, to be a springboard off which the referee can leap and twirl in terror or excitement before sinking into the abyss. This is a matter of my own personal taste. You do not have to agree. The whos of an adventure matter. Who built the location and why? Who used it? What happened to them? Who is there now? How does the location suit their purposes or hinder them? What is dangerous to them? Who are they attempting to keep in or out? Who treasured this place? Who loathes it? What signs have they left before crumbling into bone matter? Who do they miss and who do they hate? And who do they yearn for? The whos of an adventure matter. Consider multiple use cases, including reader and referee. Who is reading this adventure? How will they use it? Are they a person who runs an adventure from the page? Do they thumb the spine and run their fingers over the pages, their mind's eye imagining? Are they seated, propped up books and printed out papers, peering over a folded screen, hooting with malicious joy? Who will read and who will run it and who they will play with matters. Keeping in mind both the people in the adventure and the people experiencing the adventure matters. Consider form and function and the challenges they may introduce. How is choice centered in your design? For the reader or referee, it can be, how does this adventure cater to different methods of use? How does it welcome different approaches while challenging from a content perspective? Ground the challenge in the problems within the adventure, not its use as an instructive document. As Chris McDowell says, paraphrasing, why can't we strive for poetic cookbooks? Act with intention in creating challenges and hostility. There is a role for hostility and challenge in design and art. An adventure without danger and stakes fails to be fun or memorable in most cases. Making an instructive document intentionally difficult to experience is either a creative choice grounded in obfuscation or potentially an exercise in pretension. One can be creatively hostile. However, never forget that adventures have a function, and that it is to be read or played. Remember who will experience the adventure. If design or writing choices become an active hindrance to an adventure being experienced, that is a moment to pause and consider whether the creative choice is worth the alienation of the referee or reader. Other things to read. The basis of the game is making decisions on Retired Adventurer. 8 intangible tips for editing your TTRPG manuscript on Idle Cartillary. OSR-style challenges on Goblin Punch. Who gets to be a person on ZXU's Writing Hours. That was Prepping People-Centered Situations in Tabletop Role-Playing Games. Characters as Landmarks with Secrets. Social Contracts Shall be Splintered. And On People-Centered Adventure Design. All written by Amanda P. and read by Nick L. S. Whalen. Blogs on Tape is a project to make great RPG blogs more accessible. It's a community effort which you can contribute to by helping me curate the posts that I will read next season. I'm looking for specific posts that would translate well to an audio format and whose authors will respond when I reach out asking for permission. You can send your suggestions to me by email, ls@paperspencils.com. And whether or not you have any recommendations for me, thank you very much for listening.